Hello and welcome back to another edition of Stampede Radio. I'm your host, Chris Blystone, and joining me as always are Jim Campbell and Chris Shepherd. How's it going, guys?
Hey, Chris.
Great. How you doing, Chris?
I feel a little bit like this is deja vu because I butchered the intro here on this. We got to record this again. I probably should have just let you guys all witness that and laugh at my expense, but we decided to go back and have another run at it. And we're going to hope that the rest of the show involves less of me sticking my foot in my mouth and more game preview. So excited to get this show rolling and previewing a really important divisional rivalry game. Colts face the Texans at home in maybe their most important game on the schedule this season. I don't know if that's a stretch to say there. Obviously, they face the Texans twice, so that might be an exaggeration. But what do you guys think? I mean, it's a big game.
I think, at least as of right now, it is the biggest game or the most important game they've come up across this season.
Yeah, I think it's going to be interesting. We're not exactly at our healthiest point either. We got quite a few injuries, so let's jump right into the injury report here. Malik Hooker's back at practice, which is good news. He practiced in a limited capacity today, and awesome. I still don't know that I expect him to play. I sort of, honestly, if I'm being real honest, I kind of didn't expect him to play. I'm a little surprised that he was limited, but also, they've been really careful with guys coming back from injuries, and they've had good production from their backup safety. So it would not shock me if Malik Hooker does not play. But at this point, it also wouldn't shock me if he did. Pierre Desir with a hamstring, Tyquan Lewis with an ankle, Kenny Moore with a knee, Eric Ebron with an illness, and Justin Houston with a calf injury all did not practice today. Those are somewhat concerning. Specifically, the one that jumped out at me as very concerning was Justin Houston with a calf injury. He was not on the report yesterday and made an appearance today. I'm hoping that's precautionary, but that's somewhat concerning.
Yeah, absolutely. You see a guy, especially a vet that struggled with injuries in the past, go from, well, seemingly healthy yesterday to not participating at all. And we didn't play a game. That's not good. It's concerning at least. And we'll have to watch and see what happens. Like you said, hopefully it is just precautionary, but could be a big deal come this Sunday.
The only thing with the Colts injury reports is that it's really hard to draw any kind of conclusions this year because they've been so cautious with the way that they practice players. Frank Reich has pretty clearly shown that he doesn't mind having players miss practice during the week. I think he trusts his guys, and there hasn't really – I mean – a lot of times we were talking about that being T.Y. Hilton last year, but it seems like that's extended to a lot of players that have come in and, you know, waited until Friday and maybe they're doing walkthroughs, but they're not in practice. And then all of a sudden they're ready for game action. And I don't know what to expect. Honestly, I look at this injury report and I see Desir and Kenny Moore both on there, and they're struggling with injuries that they really, I think, sustained in the game against Kansas City and played through. And they had the bye week and time to recover. So I don't know if this is just really pushing things as far as they can. Maybe he trusts that both of those guys will be ready to go, and he's not worried about the practice, and he wants them to get as much time away from that injury as possible, enough, as much rehab as possible, and have them fully ready. I'm really hoping that's the case, because I think we're going to need them both desperately in this game, and it's definitely going to be a harder game to play if they're not in it.
Yeah, agreed. It's really concerning. The length of that list in general, I find fairly concerning.
It jumped up quite a bit from yesterday.
Yeah, and I was coming, yeah. Yesterday, I was like, oh, it's not awful. No, it's not too terrible going in. We had a bye week. It's looking good. And then this was kind of eye-opening. And, you know, Ebron with the illness, which I think kind of sucks, is there's a good chance he'll probably still play unless it's a really bad illness. But look at what happened with Kelly, a couple weeks ago. Missed practice with an illness. Came back and played and had a pretty subpar game in general. And, you know, that you don't bounce back from that stuff, you know, especially as you get older, it's harder to bounce back from some of those illnesses. And he might be on the field, but how productive will he be coming off of this injury, which is kind of worrying also.
Yeah, hopefully it's not too serious. And also, he doesn't play a ton of snaps, even when he's involved. He's probably more of a red zone weapon. And so hopefully you're not really looking at a huge strain on him as far as game time goes. I anticipate this team still wanting to try to run the ball. So he probably is not getting a ton more snaps than he normally would get, but you know, hopefully he's able to get healthy and, you know, be in good shape.
Well, I was hoping with, you know, the secondary we're going up against, we'll talk about that here in a bit, that maybe the passing game would be a bit more playing into this Colts victory that I'm hoping for, and that he, you know, maybe could see an uptick, because I'd kind of like to see Ebron have a real good game coming up here. But yeah, I think you're right. They're going to still run the crap out of the ball. So
yeah, Jim's throwing us into our last segment of the day first. We're gonna do opposites here and just flipping around here. Let's get started here first with the Texans running attack, because this is not the Texans team that we've watched in the past couple of years. I mean, what was it? I mean, I believe last year their only back of note was Lamar Miller. And he was not a bad back necessarily, but he was an unspectacular back, and he was behind a dreadful offensive line. And so there really wasn't much of a running attack to speak of for the Texans in really the past several years. That is not really the case anymore. We've got, they've made some moves to bring running backs in. And so Shepard, tell us a little bit about the running backs they've got now.
Yeah. So it was kind of wild how they added guys really right before the season started. Normally you kind of want to have your roster pretty well set heading into week one, and the Texans were still out there looking for running backs. So they ended up making a trade with the Kansas City Chiefs, and they got in Carlos Hyde. Most people probably remember him from his time with the San Francisco 49ers. He was the guy that helped to get Frank Gore to the Eagles and then the Colts. And so they brought Carlos Hyde in. He was going to get cut in Kansas City, but they had a desperate need. So traded a tackle, I believe an offensive tackle for him. And then they also made a move a couple weeks before that with the Cleveland Browns to bring in Duke Johnson, who, while he was – Once everybody's done with being suspended in Cleveland, Duke Johnson very firmly would have been the third running back on the roster. So he's a good player. He's coming up on a contract here pretty soon. Well, actually, no, I take that back. He just signed a big contract deal. But at the same time, to be the third running back and be on a big contract, you're probably not going to be on the team very much longer anyway. So he requested a trade. Texans brought him in, and it was kind of interesting how it all happened, but they've been really good so far this year.
Well, and Duke Johnson fills that need for sort of that receiving back. And they needed that. Obviously, that benefits the way that Deshaun Watson likes to play. When you have those long developing plays, it's certainly nice to have a back who you can have as a dump off option if all else fails. And if he's able to get yards after the catch, both of those guys seem like they've been productive in both aspects of the game, definitely running the ball better than they have in a long time. And a lot of that is probably, and at least according to your scouting report and what we've seen, it's courtesy of better play from their offensive line.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. They're, when I turned the games on and I started watching them, I was blown away with the difference from last year to this year with the Houston Texans offensive line, just night and day.
Yeah, that's discouraging a little bit, to be honest with you, but it's not totally surprising. They did invest, whether you want to say that they overinvested in what they spent on Laremy Tunsil or not. I think most Colts fans would agree that if you have an opportunity to bring a guy in who you think makes your line better and can protect your franchise quarterback, that's what you need to do. And if it costs you a lot of money or a lot of draft picks or whatever, you know what? Forget it. You have an all-star quarterback, and you'd like to keep him upright and keep him from getting just bludgeoned half to death and having to retire early. I think that's the right move, even if it maybe wasn't the compensation you would really like to have seen from their side of things.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, you can criticize them all you want, but you were probably going to invest all those first round picks in protecting him anyway. And if you had a chance to do it now rather than wait, you know, for the next couple of drafts, then, I can certainly understand the argument to fix it now rather than wait. So it definitely has ended up in the short term, at least, being a very good move for the Texans.
Well, and with them being able to keep their attack balanced, that certainly makes the job tougher on the Colts, because they have not been great against the run. And in the past, they didn't necessarily have to be too respectful of the running game for the Texans. I don't remember ever it being a major issue with them. The most dangerous running threat was typically Deshaun Watson in terms of leaving him, letting him get outside the pocket and scramble for first downs. But now they're going to have to be respectful of the running game, that is a thing that they're going to have to be concerned with. And that obviously makes things easier for Deshaun Watson. It allows the play action to be a factor. And this Colts team is a young team, so biting on run fakes is something they struggle with. It's definitely going to be something they're going to have to be very disciplined on defense if they're going to deal with this running attack, but also in the way that it impacts the Texans passing game.
Yeah. And that's another thing too, that really as a whole, this offense is pretty balanced as far as what they look to do in the passing game, as far as, you know, spreading things out and keeping things short. And as far as in the run game too, they do hand the ball off and they have been effective. And, you know, they kind of did the same thing we did to the Chiefs, so they can run the ball. You know, I like to think, I hope that the Colts run defense is a little better than Kansas City's, but, you know, they do have that ability to, you know, run the ball, move the ball on the ground. So they are a balanced team. And that's something that, you know, you kind of expect when you have an offensive minded head coach, but it doesn't always work out that way. But Bill O'Brien has done a good job of that.
So in terms of their offensive line, how are they in pass protection, and what is your anticipation with the loss of Titus Howard, how that right side of their line is going to hold up?
So first I'll just talk about how they've been with Titus Howard, and then I'll tell you how much I don't know about how they're going to be without him. With Titus Howard in there, they've actually been really good in pass protection. Most of the sacks, there were a lot of sacks that were given up early on, but really most of those I would put squarely on the shoulders of Deshaun Watson, holding the ball way, way too long, you know, running into sacks, starting to scramble, holding up, hesitating, and then, it, you know, kind of the thing where, you know, your quarterback gets sacked technically where he loses half a yard, and there was just some guy that happened to be close to him when he slid down. So those things happened. Those sacks were there, and the offensive line has come together a little bit more as the season's gone on. They started off, and you could probably pin some of the first couple of weeks on the offensive line, but really – the offensive line these past few weeks have been really solid. They haven't given up a sack the past two games, which I didn't do any research to see how long it's been since the Texans didn't give up a sack in back-to-back weeks, but I would guess it's been a long, long time. So, you know, it's going to be tough to generate a lot of pressure on them. With that said, like you said, Titus Howard, their first-round rookie right tackle, will be out of this game. He's going to miss a few weeks with a partially torn MCL. And so there are a couple options to fill in there. Chantrell Henderson or Roderick Johnson. I'm not sure which guy is going to fill in there. Chantrell Henderson was listed as the backup at right tackle, but Roderick Johnson, I think, is technically the third tackle on the depth chart, so I was kind of unclear about who was going to play. Either way, it's going to be a step down. I'm not sure how either one of those guys is going to step in and play, but certainly they won't be as good, and if there is an opportunity to really generate pressure, it's going to be off that right side anyway.
So according to Battle Red Blog, Chantrell Henderson is, I think, moving to IR.
Oh, wow.
Okay.
There was something to that effect. I'm not certain, or maybe just wasn't going to be active for this game. I read something about it. And I'm not certain exactly what the situation was for him, but I think it sounded like it was not going to be him, in that position. And so it'll be really interesting to see how those guys do. It'll be, like you said, some of that falls on the shoulders of Deshaun Watson and how long he holds the ball. And if they're able to get pressure, obviously that makes it harder for those long developing routes. But one of the things that's kind of interesting is this wide receiver core is not necessarily – well, so they're maybe one of the better wide receiver cores in football, but also they're not the most healthy group right now either. All three of their primary receivers for this team are to some degree hurt. DeAndre Hopkins has like a rib injury, and I believe Will Fuller had a knee or a hamstring, you know, something to that effect. There's several injuries amongst those guys, and Kenny Stills, I believe, was coming back from an injury as well. So it's going to be really interesting to see how this team, because they're definitely capable of moving the ball, but there are so many injuries, really, I think, on both sides of the ball. The Colts have a lot of injuries. The Texans have a lot of injuries. It's going to be one of those things that's hard to predict who's going to be able to play well, because our secondary is beat up. Their secondary is beat up, as we'll talk about later. And both groups of receivers have had various struggles. Theirs are going to be more injury related than ours will be. But it'll be really interesting to see how that holds up, because obviously if there's pressure quickly, I'm not sure that they have that underneath threat. They've got, and I guess we'll jump into that next. In terms of tight ends or slot receivers or guys like that, do they have a good threat for the underneath or middle of the field kind of a player if those long developing routes aren't opening up consistently, or are they kind of sunk if they can't get some of those bigger chunk plays?
Yeah, so you look at a guy, a tight end, Darren Fells. He was, and again, if he has a big day, I'm sure you guys are going to hear a lot about this, because TV announcers love to talk about former basketball players that become tight ends. I don't know why, but it's a thing. Darren Fells, he bounced around a few different pro leagues over, well, South America and Europe, pro basketball. And anyway, he's 33, and it's really the first time he's been super productive in his career. But Fells is a good receiving option, and he's, you know, the type of guy that you're going to be able to feed him the ball a little bit. And then their second tight end, Jordan Atkins, he's a second year guy out of Central Florida, and he's actually fourth on the team with 18 targets. So, you know, the Texans have a lot of good receivers. You know, you go past Will Fuller, you go past DeAndre Hopkins, and you get to guys like Kiki Cutie and Kenny Stills, like you said earlier. And those guys are really good, but the guy who's fourth on the team right now in targets behind Darren Fells, DeAndre Hopkins, and Will Fuller is Jordan Atkins, their second tight end. So even if the receivers aren't able to go, you know, at 100%, they've still got a lot of options who are, you know, good at catching the ball. And like you said, catching it over the middle and working some of those shorter and intermediate routes. So it's tough because the Texans really do have talent all over their skill positions on offense, which isn't great news for us. But, you know, I still think that their offense is one that we can defend if the Colts come out and play their game.
So, yeah. So here is their injury report on offense. So we've got Will Fuller with a calf and oblique injury, which seems like two unrelated injuries and not great. DeAndre Hopkins with rib injury, and Kenny Stills has a hamstring issue that he's trying to come back from. And then Carlos Hyde actually has a calf injury. So you've got several significant players on that offense that are injured. And obviously, without knowing, we have no clue. All of those guys were either limited or full practice, so nobody was actually held out of practice as a result of those issues. But then in terms of skill players on the offense, but it's really hard to know what that looks like in terms of actual function whether they're able to play. I mean, it may be that DeAndre Hopkins is totally fine and plays like he's totally fine. He doesn't feel very good when somebody hits him because his ribs are bruised. I don't know. And, you know, we've watched he's a tough, good player. I'm not anticipating him caving under any kind of pressure like that. So it's not one of those things, you know, where you really can anticipate that injury is going to hang these guys up too badly. But they're banged up a little bit. And hopefully coming out of a bye week gives the Colts a little bit of a leg up there. And they're able to handle their business on the defensive side. Obviously, we've got Darius Leonard coming back. They talked about, Matty Eberflus did in this past week, that the Colts would probably be playing Bobby Okereke and working him in more. Kind of, it sounded like maybe he and Anthony Walker would kind of share snaps, is what is my interpretation of the way that he kind of phrased things. And then he also talked about working EJ Speed into the game plan and letting him take some snaps at Sam, which we've talked about, and that'll be really interesting to see what that looks like. See if those guys are able to. I mean, having those guys on the field obviously works well in terms of trying to contain Deshaun Watson, having really fast linebackers that can get to the edge and make sure that he doesn't really burn you on the ground. And it'll be interesting to see how they hold up in coverage against those tight ends and you know, against running backs like Duke Johnson, who are definitely going to be used in that way as well. So it'd be really interesting. They're going to have to be really careful not to get beat deep, and they're going to have to be disciplined tacklers like they have been, but you know, we'll see how that plays out when we get on the field. If they play like they showed capable of doing against Kansas City, then I think we're going to be in good shape.
Well, that brings up the question for you, Shepard. What do you predict? Because, you know, this has been the big talk since Kansas City. How much man versus zone do you think they play? Or what do you think they stay in predominantly against this offense?
So that's a good question. I think that they probably return to more zone than what they played against the Chiefs. with that said, I think that they're going to want to try to generate pressure against that right side of the offensive line for the Texans. So the Colts aren't built to run zone blitzes. They're just not. So in those instances, whenever they send more than four guys, they're going to be in man coverage. And I think that they're probably going to try to blitz him a lot. I know I would. I would try to send a lot of delayed blitzes off the right side of that line just to try to stress the guys that are over there, because you do have a backup in. And historically, Deshaun Watson hasn't been great at identifying delayed blitzes coming off his right side. So if that's the case, if they are blitzing a lot, they're going to be in man coverage by default. On other downs, even when they're sending four, maybe there's an uptick just based on the way that they played in man, the last time we saw them play. But I do think that they're probably going to return to more zone. And that doesn't mean they're just going to be in cover two. A lot of people seem to think that the Colts are an exclusively, cover two or Tampa two team. And they're not. They run, they've run a lot of cover four. They've run some cover three this season. So there are a lot of coverage. They have mixed up some coverage too, where they've been in kind of a cover six look. I've noticed a couple of times where they're, cover two on one side of the field, cover four on the other side. So you put it together and you get six. I've noticed different coverages from them. So just because they're going to be in zone doesn't mean they're only going to be in cover two. But I think that as far as this week, I think we'll probably see an uptick. I'm not sure how much. It would surprise me if they were, if they were in the 70% of, man coverage this week like they were last week. But maybe that wouldn't be the worst thing, but I don't expect it to happen.
Well, and one of the things they did last year, and it'd be interesting, they did get kind of tricky as the year wore on, and it would be a really good time to do it and use this after having run so much man last week or 2 weeks ago. They ran some coverage that was sort of disguised at the line as being man, and then it was actually his own coverage, where I think it was Darius Leonard actually would go in motion with the running back. And so it looked like you're getting man coverage. And then when the ball's actually snapped, he is, dropping back into his zone, and a cornerback is kind of switching and taking him, almost like a pattern matching kind of thing. And it was pretty clever. I think Baldy did a breakdown of it specifically showing kind of what they did, or maybe it was Dan Orlovsky that did it, but just kind of showed how they were playing some games with the quarterback at the line to give you an idea what you're looking at and then changing it up at the snap. Be a good time to do some things like that after you've just shown that you play really well at man. Maybe there's going to be some idea from the Texans that, hey, they're going to try to employ man more frequently. And maybe you can get them early with some looks like that kind of throw Deshaun Watson off, because he's looking for a little bit more man coverage.
And if I remember correctly, it worked really well against Deshaun Watson.
Yeah.
In particular.
Yeah, it definitely did. It's really interesting. So nobody will believe me, but I actually didn't see that breakdown from Orlovsky or Baldy. But I did notice it, and I wrote about it in the opponent scouting report on offense. There was a play. It was the very first play I broke down from Deshaun Watson from last year in the playoffs against the Colts. And it was that very same thing where it was actually a corner. I think it was Pierre Desir went in motion with a receiver across the formation. And that your first instinct as a quarterback to say, oh, okay, the cornerback's trailing him, it's going to be man coverage. And then once they dropped off, and it was zone, very clearly zone. And then Kenny Moore actually, instead of going deep with a receiver that was running some deep route out of the slot, Deshaun Watson thought that his tight end was going to be wide open because he didn't expect a corner to be there. And instead, he threw it right to the Colts defender. So it ended up being an interception. So, like I said, nobody's going to believe me that I didn't see that breakdown, but I swear I didn't, guys. So it's kind of cool that those guys saw that. And that could be something, too, that, we've seen them do with some success before. And hopefully Deshaun Watson still can't figure it out.
Yeah. Well, and the thing is, too, that I think it's underrated how difficult it is to actually process that information in real time. You're dealing with a lot of, you're talking about 3 seconds basically that you're processing all this information and making a decision about where to go with the ball. And if you're adding in one more split second of having to recalculate because, I thought this was zone, so I decided this, or I thought the coverage was man, so I decided this in my head. And now as I'm, at the back of my drop, all of a sudden I realize it's not. That's enough to sometimes disrupt a play, even if they don't necessarily, throw a pick or get a sack or anything like that. Maybe they have to throw the ball away. Maybe they can't hit the read. Maybe it gives the defender a chance to get back in step with somebody if they're off, whatever it is. Those little bits of gamesmanship are what makes the difference. And so hopefully they can employ something like that. Deshaun Watson has looked better, I think, this year than last year. So maybe he is better at reading those things, but obviously any opportunity you have to get a leg up would be a good thing. Okay, we're going to take a real quick break and get a word from our sponsor, and we'll be back and go through the defensive side of the ball. Okay, guys, I want to talk to you about TickPick. TickPick is a great way to get tickets to see the Colts or any other sports, music, or entertainment event of your choice. Not only will you save 10 to 15% off every ticket order, you can do it without any annoying fees at checkout. Think StubHub, but without the fees. Just head to TickPick.com, select your seats, and head to checkout. Get on your way to the next Colts game with TickPick. And don't forget, guys, when you do go on to TickPick to get your tickets, make sure to use the code STAMPEDE to get $10 off any purchase of $100 or more. That's code STAMPEDE to get $10 off any purchase of $100 or more. And make sure you fill up the stadium with Colts fans to make it miserable for the Texans this weekend. All right, so we've talked about the offense. The Texans' offense is pretty good. They're definitely going to be a tough unit to face. Now let's talk about the defense, where the outlook is a little bit better in a couple of areas, because they are not the defense that they have been, and I believe that's what your article was titled. This is not the same sort of deadly defense that they have been in years past. They've lost some pieces. They've lost Jadeveon Clowney in the offseason, and even despite losing him, I think they're only 3 sacks behind their pace they were on last year. Seems like Whitney Mercilus is having a pretty solid start to his year so far and has maybe stepped in to kind of fill the void left by Jadeveon Clowney. And they've got some young guys who are kind of stepping up and also contributing there. So in terms of this defense, how do they stack up specifically against the run? Because they have not, one of the things when you look back through their schedule, it's really hard to see. Just from looking at statistics and numbers, it's hard to see how good this team actually is, because they haven't played against really dominant running teams. And if you look at the games they've played where they've held the run really well, they're also against teams that typically don't really run the ball all that well most of the time. So what's the story on this run defense? How do they look? And, you know, how would the Colts be best to attack them?
Yeah, so like you said, they haven't really played teams that traditionally are great running the ball when they've had, you know, good games. With that said, what the Texans do a really good job of, they're very disciplined. When I was watching some of the All-22 and breaking it down, it's rare that you see a team, when you turn on the Colts on All-22, you won't see them do it. But it's rare that you see a team maintain gap assignments from everyone. Nobody was bailing out. No one was abandoning their gap. No one was trying to go make a play that wasn't their play to make. These guys got in their gap. They played their assignment, and they made smart plays on the ball more often than not. So at the end of the year, if the Texans end up right now, they're ranked in the top 10 as far as yards given up on the ground. If they maintain that all the way through, it wouldn't surprise me, because they're very disciplined. With that said, I'm not sure that they're going to be the best run stopping front from a talent perspective that we're going to see this year. I think that last year, they're not too terribly different as far as talent goes. Maybe they're a little bit less, like you said, just due to the fact that Jadeveon Clowney is in Seattle now. And the Colts were able to move the ball on the ground last year. So, you know, I think that the Colts are physically imposing enough that they are going to be able to move the ball on the ground against this front seven. With that said, they are very disciplined. They play very smart football up front. And, you know, I don't think the Colts are going to have their most successful game on the ground this year, but I do still think that they're going to be very, very productive on the ground and kind of go out and do the things that they want to do. But again, the Texans are going to be there to clean things up. I don't think there are going to be any home runs hit in this game.
So do you think that this team is going to stack the box and try to stop the run? Do you think that's going to be their game plan on defense, or do you think that they It seems like that would be the most sensible thing, especially for the people all in the group of thinking that Jacoby Brissett maybe doesn't have the ability to beat you through the air. Do you stack the box and try to stop the Colts' run game?
Yeah, I think so. I think that that's probably what Romeo Crennel is planning on doing. I mean, if I were Romeo Crennel, that's what I would try to do. That seems to be the Texans' strength on defense right now anyway. So if you can take that away, if you can take the Colts run game away and make Jacoby Brissett, who is still, I mean, all things considered, he is an unproven passer in this league, make him beat you instead of the Colts rushing attack, which so far looks to be prolific. So, you know, I would stack the box, try to make Jacoby Brissett beat him over the top. Once Jacoby Brissett starts beating them over the top, because I mean, for a lot of reasons we'll get into, I think that's something that will happen. So when that happens, you know, they're going to have to adjust and they're going to have to kind of take some of those guys out and drop them back into coverage a little bit more. But yeah, I think that probably they're going to do their best to shut down Marlon Mack early and you know, the game will develop how it does. But that would be my plan of attack.
So who are the key players as far as the run defense goes? Who are the key players to keep an eye on? Who are the guys the Colts need to, you know, tee off on in order to really make the running game actually go?
JJ Watt is the first one. So JJ Watt and Whitney Mercilus are both really good guys setting the edge. If you can get those guys to abandon that role or to figure out some kind of a way to get them out of there, then you might be able to hit some things to the outside. If not, both of those guys are just so good on the edge, forcing runs back to where they have help. Those are really the main guys. Then you get a guy like DJ Reader up front. He's a massive individual who's way too athletic to weigh 347 pounds and be built like he is. So really he's a monster against the run too. They do have some talent up front. I that's not to say that they can't be pushed around a little bit. But you know, if you try to spread them out and you try to get those things going side to side, you're less likely to have success just because of who they've got on the edge. They're going to force you back inside to where, you know, DJ Reader is going to be able to push some guys around. And I will say that watching DJ Reader and Quentin Nelson this week is going to be a lot of fun. I think Nelson's a better player, but Reader is a big, athletic, strong player, and it's going to be pretty cool to watch those guys battle.
It'll definitely be interesting because I mean, I would say Ryan Kelly and Quentin Nelson are the two best offensive linemen on the team. And so you would think that that is strength on strength. It's going to be really interesting. I don't anticipate a whole lot of outside runs being something that the Colts feel like they need to do that much because they feel like probably their advantage there is in the middle. And Marlon Mack has had their number a little bit the last couple of games. He's done really well against the Texans. And so hopefully they're able to get him moving early. He'll be fresher than he's been in a while. He's been playing a little bit banged up, so hopefully he's been able to get a little bit healthier. I think he probably looked like he had a little bit less zip against Kansas City, despite having a very good game. There just seemed like a little bit less on his fastball maybe than what we have normally seen from him. He's just, you know, he's a quick guy, but he wasn't quite as explosive. He just was kind of following his blocks and playing smart, which is fine and excellent. And he did a great job, but you know, hopefully maybe see a little bit more explosion out of him and maybe get that running game going early, because obviously that makes things easier on Jacoby Brissett. But let's talk a little bit about the pass defense, because I think that that's an area where if I'm Frank Reich, as much as you love to run the ball and as much as that is a strength of this team, I am saying, Jacoby, you're going to set a career high in this game, because this is like feeding time right here as far as who is healthy and who is not on this Texans in this Texans defensive backs room. It's basically everybody hurt. I mean, their two starting cornerbacks, if they play, will be playing injured. And will be probably, at this point, it seems like maybe game time decisions. And let's be really honest, the Texans haven't had a whole lot of track record even with these guys stopping T.Y. Hilton, even when they're healthy. And so you've got to think this is a favorable matchup for the Colts in terms of T.Y. Hilton, in terms of, you know, Eric Ebron. Good grief, could we get Deion Kane a catch other than just a pass interference? Can we get this guy involved in the game plan? Can we get some of these guys? Zach Pascal even has had a couple of good games against the Texans. So get them involved in this game plan. It is the time. If we're just being really honest, and again, we've picked on Deion Kane. It's unfair. He was a sixth round pick. It's just totally unfair that we're picking on him for being like a sixth round pick and tore his ACL. It's really unfair to be picking on a guy who is in that position. This would be a great game to have, kind of get your foot in the door, you know, because he's going to be playing against possibly the worst secondary he'll play all season long, because the guys that are maybe going to start, I think one of them had not played any defensive snaps before. He's a special teamer, and the other has been routinely picked on throughout the year. So it's the time to shine here. I feel like if you're the passing attack, if there's anything in you, this should be a game you should be able to go out and win your one-on-ones as the receiver. And then it's up to Jacoby Brissett to get the ball in there and take some shots to be able to read the defense and play well. And the offensive line should keep him clean long enough to do that. He just has to show what he's capable of. This game, I think, will be very telling for Brissett, and we'll be able to start to figure out, is this a guy who we can go forward with in the passing game? Because he should be able to find success.
Yeah, he sure should. Right now, as of today, the Texans' best cover corner is Philip Gaines. When I looked up Philip Gaines and I looked into his background, I don't remember how many teams he's been on in the past couple of years, but it's more than like two. And that's usually not great, especially if you're a guy who's the team's best healthy corner. Rookie Lonnie Johnson, he's a big physical corner out of Kentucky. He could be good one day, but so far he's played very much like a rookie. 2018 seventh round pick Keon Crossan. He's the guy that is on the roster, but he has played, I think, like 1/4 of all snaps on special teams. He hasn't played a defensive snap yet this year. So he's their third healthy corner. So either they're planning on bringing Jonathan Joseph or Bradley Roby into this game, or they're going to call somebody up from the practice squad, you know, on, well, it'll be Thursday, Friday, whatever it is. Because going into the game with these three guys, that just seems like a really bad idea. I don't get paid to make football decisions. To me, sitting here, you know, as informed as I am, it sure seems like you're going to lose a game if Keon Crossan is your nickel corner. So good luck, Texans.
Well, it looks, looking at their injury report here, Joseph was limited participation today, and so was Roby. So they were limited participation the past 2 days, so maybe, possibly, at least they might, you know, Joseph might be out there to start, but that's not necessarily a great thing for them either.
Yeah,
but,
no, not at all.
Yeah, I mean, so T.Y. Hilton had 399 receiving yards against the Texans in their three games that they met last season. So, and that was with Jonathan Joseph perfectly healthy. I can't imagine with half of a hamstring he's going to do much better against T.Y. Hilton. I assume that he wakes up with cold sweats just thinking about T.Y. Hilton in the middle of the night. But I don't know that I would want to be facing him at less than 100%. I wouldn't want to be facing him at all, but it's definitely going to be interesting. Obviously Hilton can't be the only guy. Well, maybe he can be the only guy, but you'd like it that if there were other guys that were involved in the game plan and not to have to put it completely on T.Y. Hilton's shoulders. But honestly, I'm pretty excited that he's on my fantasy team, cause I fully expect for him to have a very good week. And I think that the Colts should be able to take advantage of this. I think it would be great because, to be honest with you, so I know I've been back and forth on this fence. We've talked about Jacoby Brissett, what he's capable of, what he isn't capable of. And we've talked about, you know, is he the guy? We don't know yet. There's not maybe enough information for us to say definitively with any kind of confidence what he can or can't do yet at this point in the season. We've only seen him in five games in this offense, and we need to see more. And I have said at times, I think we've all kind of expressed some concerns with what he's shown to some degree, or what he hasn't shown maybe. But also, I'm not in the group that's saying he's already shown us enough. It's done. He can't throw these long. I mean, I've posted these videos several times, and I have it up on Twitter somewhere, and I put it in, in my bold predictions, which obviously we're going to get to a little bit later, our own bold predictions. But in my bold predictions article that I put up today, I posted the video of him throwing from like the Colts 45 to T.Y. Hilton in their first game against the Texans in 2017. And the ball is in the air from the Colts 45 to about the 10. So it's a nice throw and it's a touchdown, just exactly where it needed to be. Two defenders closing in, perfect throw, looked great. Jacoby Brissett can throw a long pass. He can absolutely do it. It's not like he's not capable of that. I don't know where that comes from. Can he diagnose and identify and spot the receiver if it's not the schemed player? I don't know. There are still questions. It's not like we've decided that he's perfect at that stuff. But this idea that he's not capable of throwing the ball deep is just silly, and it doesn't make any sense. It's just one of those things where you think, did anybody watch 2017? There were a lot of things that sucked, but one of the few things we liked about Jacoby Brissett was that he could make those throws on these long passes, and he made them look good. I mean, if anybody remembers early in the season, last season, when Andrew Luck comes out for this Hail Mary and they bring Jacoby Brissett in to throw the ball, he has the arm to do it. It's not a problem that he's not capable of doing that. So that's a silly argument that I keep hearing. I'd like to hear that put to rest. It'd be great if they'd throw a couple long passes to T.Y. Hilton and just have some more explosive plays, because that has been missing in their game plan, and they absolutely have to do it against this team, because you better believe the Texans are going to be able to have some explosive offensive plays.
Yeah, absolutely. And, I did see that you posted that the play of Jacoby to T.Y. That is something that Jacoby Brissett can do. Frank Reich's offense doesn't dial up a lot of long plays. It's just, it's not going to. If the play is there, they're going to take it. And that's something that, maybe Andrew Luck felt a little bit more comfortable taking those shots or doing some of those things. And, Jacoby's a little more cautious as far as what he's, willing to do. With that said, Frank Reich isn't going to dial those up all the time. So I think that Jacoby Brissett's deep ball is just fine. And like you said, I think that this could be a game that we get to see some of that. We get to see it open up, because historically, T.Y. Hilton has been so explosive against these guys. And I can't imagine that T.Y. isn't going to be campaigning hard for that this week, going into this game. So hopefully we get to see that. And hopefully, like you said, we can put some of that, the talk that Jacoby can't throw deep, we can put that to rest.
Well, to compare and contrast that from 2017, that offense was made almost exclusively of the deep ball in a lot of cases. That's what they did constantly. And so you have to imagine there's a familiarity there that season doing that more often. And they're just not doing it as much, like you said, because Frank Reich just doesn't dial them up. So maybe it's a comfort thing on top of that, but also several of the deep balls, the big deep passes, have ended in pass interference. So we don't know, what those passes ultimately looked like in some cases. I remember one, maybe he threw a little short, forcing Kane to come back for it a bit. But it still ended with him being, ripped out of the, the air when the ball came anywhere near him. So yeah, we just haven't had a chance to see it. And this offense doesn't need to do it. So I could see if they were relying on the deep ball to win games and he was consistently missing on them, maybe you'd have something to say, but there's just no evidence to necessarily back up that thought of him not being able to throw the deep ball.
Yeah, I would like to see them get a little bit more. I'd like to see them dial up a little bit more in terms of some deeper shots.
Right.
Because if you show that you're capable and willing to do that with some level of consistency, it really opens things up for the run. I mean, I know that sounds counterintuitive to talk about throwing to open up the run, but if you're, I think of the Eagles team that won the Super Bowl, and that was what they did down the stretch before. It really, I don't remember how that changed as much with Nick Foles coming into the picture, but that's what Carson Wentz did. I mean, they ran the ball well, but they also threw and took a lot of deep shots. And so it's a little surprising to see Frank Reich revert a little bit more toward that, but maybe that's, like you said, Shepard, maybe that's more Jacoby's comfort zone, and maybe he's taking those middle and short reads, and Frank Reich is okay with that because it's an efficient way to run the offense. They're not, risking turnovers, and they're moving the ball successfully. It does put some more pressure on the team to be consistent, and if they stall out or if they have penalties, which they haven't done much of this year, they are, I think, the least penalized team in the league. If they stay disciplined, that's okay. You can do it that way, and it actually plays in your favor. It just does make it a little bit harder. It's just really nice to be able to know that you can go down really quick and score. The Colts have shown they do have a good 2-minute offense, but it's nice if you have the ability to take some big shots. And most of their big explosive plays have been in the run. I feel like they've been because of Marlon Mack later in the third or fourth quarter as the game wears on, getting these explosive runs. So it'd be nice to see a couple explosive pass plays. And I anticipate if there's a game to see it, it definitely would be this one.
And how much of it is a product of the injuries at wide receiver? You know, we've lost essentially our number two. Paris Campbell's now been out, a couple weeks, so we haven't really got to see him be involved in any of this as much. So it's easy to take T.Y. out of the game, especially when we've got some other lackluster performances from our other pass catchers, like Ebron. And now Pascal's actually been making some plays, so that's been pretty nice to see the past couple weeks, but it's part of it just not having necessarily the personnel to do it. And the run game's strong, so why not just keep going with what works?
I think that could be part of it. And another thing, too, that we haven't really – I don't know that I've heard anybody talk about it so much is that how much has the coaching staff tried to protect Jacoby Brissett, in this early part of the season? Can you imagine how bad it would have been for him had the first week he come out and they hadn't had a conservative game plan and he would have thrown three interceptions the first week after Andrew Luck unexpectedly retires? If people would have been calling for his head, it would have been terrible. It would have been awful for him. So that could be part of it too, just trying to protect Jacoby Brissett. I mean, obviously they're not going to do that, if there is any chance at all they're going to lose a game because they're being too conservative. I don't think that for a second. But at the same time, you kind of want to keep him safe and you kind of want to give him every chance possible to succeed. Everybody thought that following Peyton Manning wouldn't be easy for Andrew Luck. And, I'm sure that it wasn't. But following Andrew Luck certainly wouldn't be easy when he unexpectedly retired at 29. And then if you come in and aren't successful statistically right away, or you're taking a lot of deep, low percentage throws that just aren't connecting or ending in turnover, it's going to make life really difficult, and it could really hurt the confidence of the guy that you have to have play well. Brian Hoyer is your QB2, so if you want to win games and ultimately stay employed for the long term, Jacoby Brissett's confidence can't be rattled too much. So, that could be part of it too, between having those guys out, not having them, and then the coaching staff wanting to protect their starting quarterback. Certainly, I think that there are a lot of issues at play there.
Well, and think about too, the way that Frank Reich is in terms of game plan and play calling in game. And he's no different in the long game that is the season. He wants to play things as vanilla as he possibly can and get wins as long as he can. I mean, he doesn't want to show his hand too early because he knows that these games and the pressure gets tougher and tougher as the season goes on. And especially as you get to the playoffs, if he can win games just by grinding it out and running the ball, that plays directly into his hand, and he can save all of his good cards for later in the season when it starts to get to be crunch time. And I'm not saying that he's not trying to win all the way in all season long, but when you're thinking several moves ahead of some of these teams there's a reason why the Colts didn't play, why they played man coverage 75% of the time against the Chiefs. That was intentional, and they didn't do it all season long before then. That was intentional. Those kinds of things are the way that this coaching staff is thinking. And it very well could be that they think we're going to both protect Jacoby Brissett and let him get comfortable in this offense, but we're also not going to open up our entire playbook and show everybody what we can do before we have to, especially with an offensive line as good as ours and a running back as good as ours.
Well, and with this team that we're playing too, in particular, we're going to see them at least one more time. There's a darn good chance we'll see them in the wild card game again, like we did last season. So you're going to potentially see these guys three times this season if things go well. And why would you, open your hand and show them everything that you need or that you've got, up your sleeve the first game when you're going to potentially have to deal with these guys two more times.
So in terms of their pass rush, what have you seen from some of their new guys? We know JJ Watt, he's nothing new. Whitney Mercilus, he's also somebody that we're familiar with and you've gotten good production out of him. Who is filling in the gap for Jadeveon Clowney? Let's talk about some of these newer guys. Specifically, I've got a rookie in mind that I'm hoping you're going to talk about.
Yeah, so Charles Omenihu, he has looked really good. He's a fifth rounder out of Texas. It really surprised me that he went as late as he did. I assumed it couldn't have been what he showed on the field at Texas, because I thought his tape was better than that of a fifth rounder. It had to be something in interviews or, I don't know, something off the field that, you know, the public just wasn't aware of. I'm not sure why he went as late as he did. And he's played a lot better than your average fifth rounder. So I think he's only got 2 sacks on the year, but he's constantly active. He's constantly in the backfield, flashing, getting pressure, making quarterbacks step up. So Omenihu is a guy that, you know, you're going to need to watch for. You know, obviously, like you said, you know about J.J. Watt. He's going to get his. I say that, but the Colts have done a really good job limiting Watt, and they certainly did last year with Braden Smith. But with that said, you know, he's still a guy that's going to go out there and play great. Whitney Mercilus is another guy that he's going to get his pressure. He might get a sack. But Charles Omenihu is a guy off, you know, they like to use him on the interior a little bit more. So he's a guy that, you know, if you see him line up over top of Ryan Kelly, you see him line up over there against Mark Lewinsky, you know, he might flash, he might get a sack, and he's a guy that you're definitely going to have to be cognizant of.
Very good. Okay, guys, I want to talk really quick about the keys to this game. And basically what I want to do is we're each going to throw out one thing that if it happens, if the Colts make this happen, whatever side of the ball we want to talk about, if we're able to do this one thing, that we ought to be able to win this game. So Jim, if you want to get us started here, what do you think is, and it could be offense or defense, what do you think is a key to this game that if it goes our way, we're going to get a win?
Contain Deshaun Watson. I think if we can keep him in the pocket, or, you know, preferably hit him a few times, you know, get him on the ground, I think we've got this game, period. I think we keep him either confused or keep him in the backfield, we've got this game.
Yeah, I don't think he's quite to the level of Patrick Mahomes in terms of extending plays and creating things with his legs, but he has definitely got an ability to move and extend plays and get guys open. He's got the perfect receiver one in DeAndre Hopkins to do that, because he's a guy who's going to keep working to get open and can make some freakish catches. And, you know, when you let him get out of the pocket and run, I mean, he's a threat to run, but he's also a threat to run and then throw. And so it makes it a nightmare if you don't do that well. The Colts, I feel like, have done it really well against him in recent memory, and we've got the linebackers to do it well. We've got slot receivers, or slot corners rather, that do that really well. I think this is a game where you could see Kari Willis have a big impact doing that exact same kind of thing and really working to keep contain on those outside runs. So I don't know if they do a lot of designed runs or anything like that, or if they're just, you know, working on, you know, limiting his scrambling. But yeah, I think that's a big thing. If they're able to stop him from, if they're able to force him to work out of the pocket, that definitely is a big thing.
Yep. And they can, you know, keep him from breaking open a run. Which I think having Darius Leonard back, and we've said this already, but having him back is going to be a crucial step to that. And I am excited to see Kari Willis get back there and keep him contained, disrupt him a bit, because I'm really liking what I'm seeing from Kari Willis.
Absolutely. All right, Shepard, what have you got?
I think that the Colts, if they can figure out a way to make sure they have the ball last, I think they win this game. And I think that just has more to do with the type of game that I expect it to be. I think it's going to be a tight one. I think it's going to be close all the way to the very end. And I think whoever has the ball in their hands last is going to be the team that comes away with a victory.
Yeah, I definitely can see that. I mean, the Colts, I believe their last 5 of 7 games have ended in a 1-score difference that between the Colts and Texans. They play each other close, and it doesn't really seem to matter what the circumstances are. They play close games, and so I expect it will be. I mean, I don't go into this game thinking blowout is an option really either way that you go, because both of these teams know each other well. They're going to be well prepared. They know what they're getting into. They're game planning, and they're actually drafting to account for guys in this division that they're dealing with regularly. So this should be a good close game, and we'll see what it comes down to. But I agree. I think it'll be interesting to see how clock management plays into things. And definitely think that could be a big factor. So for my part, I actually, it's sort of the same thing, but, you know, I think that the thing that the Colts need to do is they need to win the turnover battle. They need to have more they have struggled to do this. Chris Ballard talked about it in the offseason that that was going to be a big key, a big component to their defense was to take the ball away. They have not done that well. They've been on the lower end of the league. I think 27th in takeaways per game is that where they rank. So not great. I think the only teams that were worse than them were, I think Dallas was below them, but the other teams were like Jacksonville, Miami, the Cardinals, and I can't remember. It was not a good list of teams. It's not a group of teams that you want to be grouped with for any reason. And Dallas was the only one that was kind of in playoff contention, and they haven't looked great over a couple of weeks either. So it's not a great group of guys to be a part or teams to be a part of. And the Colts definitely need to improve there. So I think if they can win this turnover battle, like you said, some of that plays into how close this game could be. I think if they can manage to get a couple takeaways and get points out of those, that makes a huge difference in this game. And they need to get on track with those anyway, because when you're playing the style of play that they play, when you're running the ball, when you are not putting a lot of pressure on your quarterback to go out and throw, you need to be able to start winning turnover battles. Otherwise, you're going to be in a lot of really close games, and oftentimes you're going to lose those. So they need to do a really good job with turnovers. They need to be taking care of the ball, but they also need to be getting it after it on defense. All right. So I don't know. Do you guys remember your bold predictions from Kansas City? Because I do remember mine. If you don't remember yours, I'll allow you to think about it while I'm gloating about mine. Because I'm giving myself credit. I did not get it correct. As you guys may remember, I predicted that Darius Leonard was going to force a fumble that was going to be a big impact play. And then, like, literally the next morning, he was ruled out of the game, which is the second time in one of my bold predictions that a player has been ruled out who I factored into the game and is really starting to irritate me a little bit. But I'm giving myself credit because George Odom did force a fumble that was a big impact part of the game. And so I'm going to give myself credit for that one. I'm not giving full credit. I'm going to give myself credit like when, Jim, I feel like we gave you credit for one that was really close earlier in the season. So I'm giving myself like three quarters credit or whatever. And obviously, since this is...
Oh, I was right about sacks, but one got taken away on a
penalty. Yeah. So something like that. Yeah. I'm giving myself... partial credit, and since this is basically whose line is it anyway and the points don't matter, I'm going to go ahead and say that I got three quarters credit on this one and feel pretty good about it because it did have a big impact on that game. And
I'm pretty sure we talked about it being from LeSean McCoy too, didn't we?
LeSean. It was LeSean McCoy. And we talked about why. I mean, there were definitely some reasons to think that was a possibility. I was pretty giddy when it actually happened, and I honestly didn't even care that Darius Leonard was not involved in it at all. I was just excited that it was happening, but it was also like, yeah, this feels pretty good. I feel like I am justified to at least have suspected this was a possibility. So,
and it was a good punch too, because he wasn't even doing shady McCoy things. Like, he actually had it tucked fairly well.
Yeah.
And it was just
a good defensive play.
I was like, dang, George Odom, huh? Here we go.
Yep.
I guess I'm gonna go buy the jersey now.
I'm not sure if you even can. You have to get it made custom.
Oh, I'll pay more for it then.
Yeah. Get you your custom George Odom jersey. So do you guys remember what yours were? I didn't go back and listen to see which you do.
Yeah. So I said that Jacoby Brissett would set a new career high for yards in a game. I was a little off.
Well, I mean, it was a fair thing to think. We didn't know that the offensive line was going to dominate and that the running game would be able to be so effective. And obviously that worked out better from a game plan perspective. But when you looked at that defense and thought they ought to be able to throw on them, I mean, it's the same kind of thing. If Marlon Mack comes out and runs for 200 yards, it's going to be a little bit of a surprise. But also nobody's going to be too upset about it. If he's able to run and grind out the game and, you know, keep the ball, you know, out of Deshaun Watson's hands, we're not going to complain about it.
I just didn't foresee a game that the Colts wouldn't need to pass the ball in against the Chiefs. So that was definitely a surprise. I'm very, very happy that I was wrong. I'm happy that I was as wrong as I have ever been trying to predict a football game before. It all turned out great, but my bold prediction was definitely very wrong.
All right, Jim, do you remember yours?
Mine was contingent on whether or not Mac could go, because we didn't know at that point whether or not Marlon Mack was going to be in the game. If I remember correctly, I think that was it. And so It was all about Nyheim Hines. And since Mac went, I said that he was going to lead the team. He's going to be the team leader in receptions, which I think he actually tied T.Y. with receptions.
All right. I would be willing to give you credit for that.
But he did lead in yards. So,
all right. I feel like that's close enough.
I think that was the case.
I remember Jim's prediction because it felt like he made 40 of them. I was like, one of them's going to be right for sure.
Jim was making the prediction and then all of the prop bets to go along with it.
Yeah, I was throwing it all out there, just letting you know where I was at. I was all in on Nyheim Hines. Yeah, and he was okay. Yeah. Like, it was fine. He was good enough. He's what was necessary.
Basically, the game plan went so well that we were all thrown off by it because we all anticipated. Yeah. Legitimately, nobody anticipated that they were going to be held to 13 points. And had we predicted it, we would have been roundly made fun of, and rightly so, because it would have been an absurd, like, hey, yeah, they're going to score half the points they've ever scored in a game with Patrick Mahomes under center. Of course, we were not going to expect that to happen. So it just played out totally differently than we expected. But all right, so we need to make some new bold predictions for this game. And I already made some in my bold predictions article. So I will let you guys get started unless you need a minute. And then I guess I can throw out one of my bold predictions from my article that I wrote today.
So I'm going to throw out the same bold prediction I made last week because I think it's another game where it's likely to happen, but it didn't. So that's why it's bold. I think Jacoby Brissett is going to set a new career high for passing yards in a game.
So do we know what that – it's mid-300s, yeah?
I think it's low 300s. I'll look it up real quick, but I'm pretty sure it's low, like 315 or something.
Yeah, I definitely think that could be a very, very likely possibility. I have a feeling with the balance on this team that they're going to score more than 13 points. Mm-hmm. And so there may be a need for Jacoby Brissett to throw the ball a little bit more. And, you know, if the game plan plays out the way that it played out against the Chiefs and it's another Marlon Mack day, I don't think any of us are going to complain. So I think that's probably a bold prediction, but I also don't think it's an unrealistic one. So yeah, I think that's a good one.
Well, Shepard, you have inspired me. Since you're going to stick with your bold prediction, I'm at least going to stick with a player I've made prediction on here in the past. And I think Kari Willis is going to have maybe 3 tackles for a loss. Like, I am all in on that man.
All right.
Just
that is as bold as an ice cream sundae.
Oh, I think that's a pretty good number. 3.
I don't know. I feel like that is as spicy as the mild sauce at Buffalo.
Well, I'm not going to change it because then I would just be accused of making 45 predictions. So no, I'm going to go with that. And if he has more, then
I'm not going to lie to you. I can't believe that you didn't make a Ben Banigou related prediction.
No, I'm holding off. We're going to see on the Banigou. I want it to happen.
All right.
Maybe it's because I like saying Banigou.
I know that you do.
It really is probably just all about that Banigou.
I think Banigou could have a big game. I think that your bold prediction would have been bolder had you made a prediction with Banigou involved in it. And I'm just going to, I'm just going to give you grief about this. You're probably going to be right. Kari Willis, I think I anticipate him having a good game, especially because they like to use, running backs out of the backfield in the passing game. It's going to give lots of options for swing passes and tackles for a loss. And Deshaun Watson scrambling could be there's definitely the potential for something like that. So my bold prediction is, well, I had a couple bold predictions and I haven't decided. I'm not sure how bold this actually is. So I had to make it kind of ridiculous to actually be a bold prediction. My bold prediction was that T.Y. Hilton actually has a career high game against the Texans. And that's not necessarily bold if you see what he's done to the Texans, except for that if you see what he's done to the Texans, that's a pretty high bar. Mm. He's got 223 yards against the Texans in a game. That's an insane number of yards. And so that to me is what makes this boldest, because he's got to get like upwards of 225 yards and maybe a touchdown to top his previous efforts. If it weren't for the fact that the Texans have been just a gaping maw where it comes to defending T.Y. Hilton, I would feel a little bit better about this maybe, but like, you know, their track record sets the bar so high, it could actually be a really stupid prediction on my part. He could have 180 yards and two touchdowns and not actually accomplish my bold prediction, which would be awesome, and I would be fine with it still. So, TY, if you want to have 180 yards and two touchdowns, I'm going to pat myself on the back, give myself an L, and be just fine with it. But yeah, so that's my bold prediction, is that TY is going to actually eclipse his prior totals against the Texans. Now, he has had fewer yards with Jacoby Brissett in the first year, or in the first meeting in 2017. He had 175 yards and two touchdowns, which I actually would consider a better game maybe than the 223 and no touchdowns. But obviously those yards were valuable, and significant part of the ability to move the ball was Hilton just basically doing it himself. So I think he gets over that 200 yard mark. Let's say I'm going to chicken out now. No, I'm not going to do it. I'm not going to chicken out. I was going to back mine down to 202 touchdowns. But I'm going to say he still breaks that record. So we're going to say 225 and two touchdowns. It's stupid. It's probably unlikely, just because I feel like you got to get the ball to somebody else. I mean, that just means they're just throwing to T.Y. Hilton all the time.
It's worked in the past.
But I just feel like the Texans just aren't going to have no answer for him, because they're going to be you don't put a bunch of scrubs out there and try to cover T.Y. Hilton. It's just a bad plan, and I don't know that they have any way not to be doing it that way. They just don't. They're too banged up. So so 225 and two. That's my prediction for T.Y. Hilton. That's my bold prediction, and undoubtedly T.Y. Hilton will be promptly ruled out for the game, because it seems like that's the way it goes for me. I don't think that's going to happen. But
so if that happens this week, Chris, I'm going to need you to only make predictions about the other team from here on.
Oh, out. Yeah, every bold prediction will be about the opposing team for the rest of the season. Actually, I'll make a bold prediction about the opposing team, and I'll also make a bold prediction about the Patriots for the rest of the season.
That'd be good.
All right.
All right. So. Let's predict this game. What are our predictions and score predictions for this game?
So my prediction for this game, like I said, I think whoever has the ball last is going to win. I think that Jacoby Brissett's going to have a big day. I think that that the Colts can still have a very effective day on the ground. But I think that the final score it's going to be a high scoring affair. I thought the last one would be two, and I was way wrong about that. But I think that the Colts are going to come out and hang 31. I think the Texans will finish with 28.
Yeah.
Yep. That sounds good. Mm-hmm. I like that score total. I have a tendency to pick that score total. I was actually thinking of it before you said it, and had just changed it, just not because I actually think it's going to be different, but because I just picked that score total too often. So I changed mine. I'm going to say, 28-24 Colts. But no, actually I'm not going to say that. I'm going to say 27-24 Colts, because I think that, the Texans kicker is going to shank a field goal, and that's going to be relevant in this game. So I think 27-24. I really want to make it hurt. I have apparently that's my thing now, is predicting devastating kicker things at the end of games, because I believe that I predicted that against I believe that was my prediction for the outcome of the Colts game against the Chiefs. Thankfully, I was completely wrong on that one.
Yeah, so actually, that's a pretty good bet, because Kamimi Fairbairn has not he's not been great so far this year. So it's a very, very real possibility.
And it's all been recently. He missed, I think, two extra points and a field goal in the last two games. He's missed four kicks in the last two games. Yep. So not great. I think Adam Vinatieri has missed one fewer kick than he has, but all of his were at the beginning of the season, and he's been since, other than that 57 yarder, he hasn't had a whole lot of issue with kicking afterwards. So, all right, Jim, what's your prediction?
Exactly what Shepherd's was. I've kind of been kicking that number around all week also. So yeah, that's sorry to be a bit of a copycat, but that's right where I was with it.
I mean, I don't think you're a copycat. I think it just shows that we're all kind of thinking the same thing. So yeah. I think that's a pretty good estimate for this game.
It makes sense. Yeah. And yep. I'm going to be at this game, which is pretty exciting. And I am stoked. I love going to the Texans games in particular. They're always a lot of fun.
Nice.
they're really good games to watch. So yeah, I'm pretty excited to watch this. I haven't seen the Texans since 2017, I think. So, which wasn't the greatest time. Actually, no, that was a good time. We still won that game.
Yeah.
It wasn't looking good for a while there, but if I remember, we did win that game. So
I think Jacoby Brissett won both of his games that year against the Texans.
He did. The second game wasn't very pretty, but they did still get a win.
Yeah.
So definitely excited to see the outcome of this game. We just can't. I mean, you can't understate the significance of this one, because if the Colts win this game, they're at the top of the division, and they're kind of in a position of control, because they'll have beaten two divisional teams. The Titans are not coming back. The Jags are trying to hang around, but ultimately, I mean, they just traded away their best player, and you know, I'm just not convinced they have what it takes to really make a fight in the division. This is going to be the fight right here. The Colts and the Texans down to the wire. All of these games matter. And if they were able to get two wins against the Texans, that goes a long way. I think every game on the schedule left to the Colts is a winnable game. And the Texans are going to present the two toughest games left on their schedule, in my opinion. Maybe the Saints, depending upon what they look like by that point, we'll see. Definitely are going to not be an easy game, but for sure those two games against the Texans are going to be really tough games. And if they can get a win early, that puts them in a good spot. And yeah, I think they could feel really good about it. And I think this team gets viewed very differently if they go and win this game, because everybody's kind of waited. You know, if you watched what happened to kind of public opinion when the Colts beat the Chiefs, it was kind of, hold on, let's see if this was a fluke. Let's see what happened here. Now, if we go and beat the Texans, who have kind of become the darling of the NFL through the last couple of weeks, I think that people start to take note, which maybe isn't a great thing. It's nice to kind of be the underdog a little bit, but I think there's just going to be a lot of notice taken of the Colts if they're able to win this game, and deservedly so, because at this point with what we've seen tonight, and I'm not breaking any news to anybody listening to this, you know, Patrick Mahomes went out with a pretty nasty knee injury. We don't have any updated information. By the time you hear this, you probably will. But it didn't look good. And that kind of stuff changes the face of the AFC. And man, we really need somebody to beat the Patriots. So they just, like, they can't, they just, I can't deal with the Patriots being in the Super Bowl again. So we need one of these teams to get hot. And it'd be great if it could be the Colts. So, so this game's a big deal. So Jim, yell really loud.
Oh, I'm going to. No worries about that.
And if the crowd is too quiet, if the crowd is quiet, I'm holding you personally responsible.
That's fine.
Which seems totally fair.
I'll take it, man. I'll put it on my shoulders. Okay.
Seems like it's in your power to. I will tell you, hang on to your phone. Don't do a Matt Dainley.
And, I'm not going to.
And signal an incomplete pass and fling your phone onto the field. They discourage that. All right. So last thing to talk about, guys, is the jersey giveaway. We've had a few more people sign up. There's still not a ton of people signed up, and I'm telling you, you're missing out on an opportunity to win that jersey. It's a home T.Y. Hilton jersey, and you're going to want that jersey after he sets, you know, his career high in this game against the Texans. You're really going to want to have this to celebrate, especially as the season goes along. All you have to do to enter is just retweet that original tweet. It's pinned on the Stampede Blue Podcast's Twitter page, and just follow all of us on Twitter, and then, you know, follow those instructions. They're going to be in the story notes, you know, that are going to be on Stampede Blue with this podcast. And you follow that link, you go through all of the process, make sure you've got all that stuff. You're going to subscribe to the podcast and review us. Some of the reviews have been great. And there's one of them that I'm definitely going to read. I'm not doing it today, 'cause we're a little bit long on time here, but I'm going to read them. Maybe the midweek show next week, we'll read one of those or a couple of those reviews if we have some of them. There are some excellent ones that I've seen so far, and we really do appreciate those, guys. We've added about 10 or 12 reviews over the past week, which is really a good thing, but we need to add some more. Some of you, if you've done everything but submit the review, and I think some of you have submitted reviews that haven't gone through that I can see yet. So that may be part of it, but go through that process, share it with people that you know might want to win. I mean, honestly, that's the whole idea, is to get the word out there. It's an official T.Y. Hilton jersey. It's going to come from the pro shop. Again, we've talked about this. It's not coming from the back of somebody's car. If you'd rather have one from the back of somebody's car, I could get like a T.Y. Hilton jersey that's like got, you know, felt sewn on letters, if that would make you feel more excited. Mm-hmm. I guess we can discuss that if you win, but you have to enter the contest to even have the privilege of having that discussion. So give yourself a shot to win. Doesn't cost you anything. You follow our podcast. We feel like it's a pretty decent podcast. You don't actually have to listen to our podcast. You can just follow it if you want to. I mean, tell your mom to enter, tell your dad to enter. My mom is subscribed to our podcast. I guarantee you she's never listened to a single one of them, but she's still subscribed because she's my mom. So yeah, you guys could do the same thing. Just sign your mom up. Don't tell her. Just, you know, subscribe her phone to the podcast and sign up with her email. And then if you win, you get a T.Y. Hilton jersey and your mom will be confused and it'll be fine. It can be your Christmas present. It's getting to be close to that time and she'll be, you know, she'll have you covered. It'll be good. So take advantage of that, guys. We're going to be drawing in a little bit under 2 weeks. And so take advantage of it. Tell people you know about it. Get involved, get in there and get your name in the hat so that you get a chance to possibly win that. And that's all we got, guys. This is a big game. It's going to be exciting to watch. And yeah, we'll be back on Wednesday to discuss it. Hopefully a positive outcome. And look at the game slate coming up ahead and the trade deadline that's actually coming up ahead. I don't know that there's going to be a whole lot of relevance for the Colts, but we're going to take a look at that over the next couple of weeks. Maybe look at some potential players that the Colts could look at that they undoubtedly won't. But we'll do that song and dance anyway, because it's that time of year and we could always be wrong. We could even look at we'll look at some potential players that maybe the Colts could trade away and get some picks, because that does happen from time to time. Chris Ballard's definitely done that, and there is a need at some positions out there in the NFL that he might be willing to rack up a few more picks for. So we'll get into all that stuff on Wednesday. Follow us on Twitter at Chris Blystone, at NFL Scheme, and at Jim Campbell 81. And check out Stampede Blue and all the other podcasts. There's lots of good stuff coming out. Shepherd's scouting reports are up there, and you can go look at those. That'll tell you a lot of the stuff we talked about today in far more detail. And yeah, check out Stampede Blue, listen to all those other podcasts, and get yourself ready for game day. Go to TickPick and get yourself some tickets. You can go find Jim and buy him a drink. I'm sure he would be okay with that.
Yeah.
He'd be okay with that.
Totally okay with that. Hey, say hi. If you see me. Yeah.
You don't know what Jim looks like, but I mean, you can just walk around.
My picture's on Twitter.
If you
follow me, you sign up to get that T.Y. Hilton jersey that I'm totally going to win. Yeah.
Well,
then
you can't win. You can't win, Jim.
You keep telling me that, and I just don't understand it.
Just walk around Lucas Oil Stadium and with a beer in hand, and just yell, "Jim," and he'll find you.
He'll find you. Nobody else will answer. Just me.
If you beer him, he will come. And so
that is so true.
That's all I got to do. That sounded far more inappropriate than I meant it to be. But
yeah, actually, now that I think about it, that's real awful.
I was thinking, like, I'm pretty sure I've seen this movie.
Yeah, and then I was like, oh, wait, no. It's worse than that. It works way better when it's they.
Man, we were doing so well. Before we got off the rails here, we were doing so well. All right, guys, that's all we got. We're going to get out of here because it's not going to get better from here. And we will catch you on Wednesday and hopefully be talking about some positive news. And, yeah, we'll catch you guys next time.
Later.
Bye. We'll